Attention all passengers. The Uber ride for Jeff's rugby team will depart in 5 minutes from platform 15. Your ride comes with 6 toilets and a refreshments carriage that you'll empty within 5 minutes. Thank you for booking your tickets on Uber.
Trains on Uber.
Support for this show comes from Limpy, the Lillehammer Institute of Music Production and Industries. It's a one-year program in Norway built by hit songwriters where you learn music the way it actually gets made in the studio every day alongside the people doing it professionally. Limpy believes classrooms don't create artists, studio sessions do. I've been telling you about Limpy for a few episodes now, and I want to tell you why. 2 years ago, I met a former student from Limpy, an American songwriter. She'd come out of the program just excellent at writing songs and ready to move to LA and start collaborating. And she was super jazzed about this program. And the way she talked about Limpy, it sounded like a fairyland. In 1 year, you get to collaborate with 70 students and 20 studios, and hit songwriters from all around the world are flying in. You're making music every single day in one of the most beautiful places on earth. I make a music podcast for a living. I talk to a lot of working musicians. I hear about a lot of music programs, but this one definitely sounded different. It was built by people who write actual hits, and it's set up around this one idea that you get really good at writing songs by writing songs with other people and writing a lot of them. So when Limpy invited me to come speak to their students, I said yes immediately. I didn't quite know what I was about to walk into, and frankly, it blew me away. Stick around to find out what I saw when I got there in a little bit in our next ad break. And if you're looking for a unique music education in an extraordinary place, then apply now at limpymusic.com. That's LIMPImusic.com. Applications close May 31st.
Welcome to Switched on Pop. I'm producer Rihanna Cruz.
I'm songwriter Charlie Harding.
And I'm musicologist Nate Sloan.
Nate, Charlie, somehow the flowers are blooming once again. The calendar says May. Here on Switched on Pop, I think you guys know what that means. It's the campiest time of the year. The Eurovision Song Contest is upon us once again.
And usually it comes with those beautiful flowers. This year with some storm clouds as well.
Yeah. For those of you that aren't familiar, every year, the countries of Europe and assorted other locales gather to display the best songwriting that their country has to offer. That can mean whatever these countries want it to mean. The competition has given us such icons as Celine Dion, ABBA, and my personal obsession as of late, Dutch musician Joost Klein. Check him out if you haven't. This year's competition is the 70th edition, and it's held in Vienna, Austria, following last year's win by the artist JJ and his song Wasted Love.
I love that if you are from the home of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, you must, in your Eurovision Song Contest song, bring in the opera.
Lots of operatic vocals in Eurovision, writ large. This year, you mentioned storm clouds, Charlie. It's worth noting that while Eurovision seems to pride itself on being, quote unquote, apolitical, this year's edition is extremely politically charged, specifically focusing on the European Broadcasting Union's inclusion of Israel in the contest. This has been a hot-button issue for the past few years of the competition. In 2026, specifically, there's been a notable boycott. Artists like Massive Attack, Kneecap, Brian Eno have all signed an open letter for said boycott. The 2024 winner Nemo even returned their trophy back to the EBU. And the countries of Ireland, Spain, Iceland, Slovenia, and the Netherlands, all Eurovision powerhouses, have withdrawn their participation from the contest. So these are very real concerns that are impacting the general tenor around Eurovision this year and the way the competition is perceived.
For an event which is so often very lighthearted, it's now very heavy. You know, as reporters, I feel like we need to cover the event in some way, and including its boycott. How do you want to go about this year, Rihanna?
Well, personally speaking, you know, I am not going to watch the competition this year.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of viewers out there are holding off as well. There's ample reporting on the boycott and the history of Eurovision if people want to check that out. But I feel like Eurovision is music news, and we are a music podcast. Nonetheless, we do have kind of an obligation, as we have the past couple years, to sift through some of the big submissions to the competition.
So for folks who choose to not watch, maybe this is sort of like, here are the highlights of the things you need to know that you're going to skip out on.
Exactly. Even if you're joining me and not watching, you'll get the gist. And even if you don't want to listen to this podcast, you could skip to the end, because we will have an unrelated bingo update for all here today.
Eurovision is such a crucible for the development of new sounds in global pop that, despite the turmoil surrounding this event, I feel like we have to check in and hear what is percolating out there across the world. What are the sounds that we might hear sort of proliferating throughout our pop charts in the future? Okay, so there's many countries that are choosing to participate in this event. A number of them are at the very top of the game, you're saying. We're going to look at the top four. How are we going to evaluate them?
So there's a couple things that go into judging these songs. The showmanship of it all is definitely important. You know, all of these songs have a visual component in the contest, and that kind of shapes people's perception of the music. But the three musical aspects of each song are its vocal qualifications, the song's composition, you know, is it new and exciting? Is it pushing boundaries? And a general impression of the song. How does it make you feel? What does it leave you with? You know, are you going to be thinking about it 10 minutes from now when the next entrant is on screen? You know, you got to think about all of these things and put them together. It is a song contest after all. So we will be looking at the songs sans the live performance.
Okay, so we're getting rid of the visual because it's a podcast.
Yeah.
We're talking, how good is the song itself, lyrics and music?
Yeah.
How good is the performance? And then a little bit of je ne sais quoi, that little extra, how's it make you feel?
Yeah, there's always a je ne sais quoi when it comes to Eurovision. So without further ado, let's get into it with the top four songs. Coming in at number four, we have the artist Delta Goodrum and her song Eclipse, representing the not European but still participating country of Australia.
The Eurovision Song Contest eclipses just Europe. As a reminder, the European Broadcast Union includes nations including in North Africa, the Middle East, and one of the associate members, not a current full-fledged member, is Australia, who somehow gets to still participate.
This song feels like classic Eurovision. It's got the soaring strings. It's got the build into the anthemic chorus. It's got lyrics that when you first listen to them, you're like, yeah. And then you listen to them again, you're like, what? Like, what does it mean when we eclipse? Like, I don't understand. Like, doesn't one thing eclipse another thing? So how do you eclipse together as a verb? If someone could explain that to me, I'd be, you know, very grateful for a lesson in astronomy. So great place for us to start. Delta Goodrum. Amazing name, by the way.
Yeah, I had never heard of Delta before. Apparently, she is one of Australia's highest-selling female artists, of all time. Her debut album in 2003 sold millions of copies and stayed at number one for 29 weeks. I could see it as like if Christina Aguilera was the American entrant if we were in Eurovision, you know, kind of like on the same plane, maybe, of fame. But this song has an 8% chance of winning, according to bookies. Anything can happen. These are pretty good odds for the Eurovision bookmakers. Eclipse has good mature vocals. I think they're delivering in that department. The song goes from this ballad, as we hear at the beginning of the song.
Shadows in the moonlight, dancing with the sun. Planets are aligning to love as one, and it won't be
Maybe that's your definition of eclipsing, Nate. The opening line, shadows in the moonlight, dancing with the sun, planets are aligning to love as one.
So when we eclipse is when we come together as one, so there's no light emerging. Our bodies are perfectly together. Am I reading this correctly? I still find it inscrutable. but I do love the opening line, shadows. Very dramatic.
It's funny, it doesn't sound, and I don't feel like I have my ear on the sound of Australia, but the beginning is very sort of like, it feels like 50s Hollywood, Lawrence of Arabia. It feels like it's hinting towards like more Middle Eastern style sounds, but with orchestra and harp, and it's very over the top.
I know that we're not considering the visual aspects of the song, but you're kind of on the money, Charlie, because the music video is her playing the piano in the middle of a desert. So I think that's kind of the vibe that she's going for.
Australia has many deserts. Yep, that works.
So the song starts in this ballad space, and then as we move into the chorus and get to the end of it, we move into this folk pop, almost stomp clap beat. There's this massive chorus and stacks of vocals.
You just described every Mumford and Sons song. I'm very curious what's going to happen.
If you take away the banjos from Mumford and Sons, maybe you'd get something close to this song. You know, very like One Republic adjacent. You know what I mean?
I really don't like this. And it has to do with my reporting on the AI company Suno.
Ooh.
When you make generative AI music, so often the song, I feel like the like regression to the mean of its idea of pop music is begin in a ballad. And then in the chorus, go a little bit EDM with a four to the floor kick thing that nobody asked for. Obviously, that's derived from pop music conventions, but they're very old. They feel very tired. This is a way of building a 2010s ballad EDM crossover.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel relevant. And unfortunately, because of the way that AI is making so many of these copycat kind of songs, it doesn't feel alive and real. It doesn't leave me with that je ne sais quoi. It makes me feel a little flat, even though the vocal performance is powerful. Unfortunately, I think the arrangement is too polished and perfect and represents something which is inhuman.
I hear you. I felt that way until I got 2 minutes into this song. Every Eurovision song is 3 minutes max. So in the back third of this track, she switches it up a little bit and gives it that real element that kind of puts it over the edge for me.
Let's turn it around.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
Woo!
Okay, let's go. Let's go.
Wow. This is like Celine Dion and Bon Jovi made a power ballad together with, I feel like they're trying to impress the Viennese with this unbelievable sort of classical style piano that happens as well. I like it a lot
Charlie,
more now.
Say it. Say it. What happens? What do we get? What do we get? Say it.
What do you mean? What do I take it back?
Well, you haven't said, no, what happens harmonically?
Oh, there's a modulation, obviously. Every song in Eurovision modulates in the final third. You gotta up the ante. But this one is a good one.
That was kind of a surprising one with that little piano interlude.
Yeah.
Y'all, I know I'm hung up, but is it not that one thing eclipses another? Like, it's not just that you eclipse. You have to eclipse something.
What are we eclipsing?
Well, she just says, when we eclipse. What is, like, I don't, I Okay, I'm not loving your reaction here. You're just looking at me like I'm a crazy old man.
Nate, you kind of have to turn your brain off with these lyrics. Like Eurovision, you need to kind of shut off the part of your brain that understands logic.
Stop trying.
Okay, I accept. That's all I needed to hear. That's all I needed to hear.
So we have vocals. We have interesting composition with that key change, even though I wish it was more of the song, but nonetheless. And the je ne sais quoi of this track, Eclipse, it grew on me a little bit. Mm-hmm. When I listened to it the first time, I kind of threw my head in my hands and was like, oh my God, not this. As soon as it got to that little piano break, I was energized. So I like it. And I think it'll play well live. So we have Delta Goodrum at number 4. Moving on, next up at number 3, we have the artist Søren Toppegaard Lund from Denmark. Apologies if I butchered that. I don't speak Danish. The song For Vigar Hem.
I don't know. You have to play more for me. It's not doing much for me yet.
It's kind of hard because I do think the whole track is kind of underwhelming, but let me move to the next chorus.
When we listened to the verse at the beginning, I was getting like reggaeton meets industrial. The chorus feels more like classic Eurovision, but I agree. It's not really pushing my buttons. I mean, obviously, I speak fluent Danish, but Rihanna, maybe for those who don't, what is this song about?
So the title translates to Before We Go Home and is about a night at a club with neon lights and smoke and an on-again, off-again lover that you can't escape. As it stands, it has an 11% chance to take home the trophy. I think this is kind of a fan favorite from what I've gathered from the Eurovision subreddit. The thing is, though, I don't really connect with this song. You know, there's this kind of ethereal club vibe. There's this intense thumping indicating something darker, right, when he hits the For Vigar Hem part.
So there's some like techno synths happening. There's a lot of cinematic percussion.
Feels very trailer music.
It feels like trailer music. Just, yeah, those like, don't. You're like watching it's like a C tier Hans Zimmer track.
There's one thing about this track that I think is of note. I don't know if I like it, but the pre-chorus sounded very familiar to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if you guys can hear what I can hear.
Oh my gosh. Mm. Wait, this is another melody. Is this a Charlie Puth song? Ugh, what is this?
Not quite, but you're kind of close.
Is it a Gaga track?
Again, close.
Oh my gosh.
It is One Last Time by Ariana Grande.
Never would have gotten that. Let's hear it.
Oh.
And here's the Eurovision song again.
To be fair to our Danish friends, I feel like that is a common melodic motive that we could probably find in a lot of songs. I definitely hear it in the Ariana. Charlie, I wonder if you said Lady Gaga because it also sounds like Shallow a little bit. I'm falling. It's that same motion. The melody goes 1, 2, 3 and the chords follow underneath. I guess they're going like 1 minor 2 and then probably 1 in first inversion.
Yeah.
So good ears, Rihanna, but I think this is probably a wider kind of melodic harmonic phenomenon than even just those two songs.
All right. I was like, maybe Søren is a secret Arianator out there in the world. It is.
Aren't we all?
It seems entirely plausible.
What I'm learning from this song is I am fundamentally not European, because if this is a favorite, it's so clear that I'm just in a different musical culture and that there's something I'm not catching on first listen.
I dig it. I feel a little differently. I it's not like setting my world on fire, but it's cool. One of the things I love about Eurovision is how many of these songs have like double meanings. You know, they'll have some personal narrative, but then there's some kind of larger theme as well. Like Rihanna, you mentioned Juiced earlier. I remember his song Europapa was kind of about his family, but it was also this like larger meditation on borders and international travel. So like, I'm curious if we're going to get a song that has like one of these double meanings coming up.
It's so funny you mentioned that, because the next entrant coming in at number two with the second best odds in the competition has these double meanings. And that's Greece's Akilas and his song Ferto.
Oh, I'm really looking forward to some folk instrumentation. We have not gotten that yet in a Eurovision entry, and I feel like we're going to get it right now. Real estate, Ferto. Sashimi tuna, Ferto. Chriso roloia, lead designer, su leo, Ferto. Leather palto, Ferto. Que escargo, Ferto. Rally cars, yo me stars, su ipa, Ferto.
There it is. Knew it.
This has something for everyone.
This is sick.
Oh, yeah. This track has a 15% chance of winning. And low-key, I'm throwing myself behind Ferto. I love this song. As we've heard in the entries from Australia and Denmark, I feel like there's been a lack of these high-energy, goofy songs in the competition this year. And so I think Akilas really stands out from the rest of the crowd. Every part of this song is peak Eurovision, high energy silliness. The chorus is built around the word ferto, which in Greek translates to bring it. So he's singing about all of these things that he wants, like real estate and sashimi tuna, as he's saying, bring it, give it to me, right? Like, I want it.
And of course, the essential folk instrumentation. You got to have some sort of acoustic folk instrument in your track to demonstrate your nationality or heritage while blending it with the most over-the-top electronic sounds that make people dance, as if it's still the 90s, though, right? Like, so much Europop still sounds like the 90s to me. I feel like I just took a time machine to another time.
I believe that instrument in the post-chorus is the lira from Crete.
Bowed fretless instrument that has a sort of violin-esque sound, a precursor to the violin. Yeah.
So after the breakdown, we have this clubby auto-tuned verse that switches up the vibe.
It really does have something for everyone.
In this verse, Akilas is talking about how he wants everything. This track is essentially an ode to hedonism, something I like, along with the Greek instrumentation. He's also singing in multiple languages. He sings in English, he sings in Greek, but he also sings in French at the start of this verse. And at the beginning of the song, he sings in Spanish as well. It's taking a worldly approach, perhaps designed for everybody in the competition to connect. Maybe his goal is to get more votes from these other countries. We play on this post-chorus breakdown even further with a little bit of video game music. We have a bit crushed section in the song.
I want to play that game.
It's a video game. Akilas is winning. I think this has a really good chance. It'll perform really well on stage. It actually reminds me of my favorite Eurovision song from the past few years, the song Cha-Cha-Cha by Karja from Finland in 2024. It has a similar construction and is kind of bridging the gaps between this clubby and industrial vibe.
I could totally hear that, Rihanna, but
I was actually going to compare it to a banger from one of your favorite Eurovision artists, the Estonian great
Tommy
Cash, Espresso Macchiato, right?
Espresso macchiato. Multilingual, vote pandering set to a Euro pop, Euro dance beat. Yeah.
For sure. So the construction and composition of Ferto is there for me. It leaves an extremely positive impression. I've been singing it all week. So that really just leaves the vocals. And if you weren't sold by the rapping and the auto tune, Aquila slows it down in the final verse and kind of switches the meaning of the song on its head.
Whoa. I'm not sure if we've just honored or completely disrespected Freddie Mercury, but I did not expect that bridge.
It's a wild pivot, and he's singing in Greek that all of this he's doing for his mom, talking about the fact that he grew up poor and saying to his mother, look at all the things we didn't have. I'm going to make sure we never lack again. So when he's singing about like buying houses, buying sushi grade tuna, buying all of these really expensive things, you think it's about hedonistic pursuits. But actually, the last verse flips it and he's reflecting on his past growing up without much money. So it's the classic Eurovision switch.
But also a little bit of mama, life has just begun. That's what I'm hearing to Freddie Mercury as well. It's like lyrically we're singing about our mom.
Mama just killed a man.
We got the piano. We got the layered vocals. Smart move. This is why I come to Eurovision. You know, I'm really bummed that this contest is marred in such dark politics, and understandably, but what it has to offer when it's going well is a style of music which is unlike what I typically expose myself to. Rihanna, you opened up by saying that it's a contest of the best songs in the European Broadcast Union. I don't think that's what Eurovision is. I think it is a competition of the best Eurovision songs. They are their own sound. They are their own thing.
Whatever that means in the eyes of the EBU.
Yeah.
I think Ferto kind of checks off all the boxes. While I would love Aquilas to take it home, he is in second in terms of odds. People are predicting that this year's winner comes not from Greece, but from Finland, with the duo Linda Lampenias and Pete Parkkonen and their song Lickenheiten, which translates to flamethrower.
Ooh.
Lots of fire motif in Eurovision. There always is.
That post-chorus is giving me life.
Linda Lampenius is a classical concert violinist who also goes by Linda Brava. And Pete Parkkonen is a singer-songwriter for Finnish people tapped into both Eurovision and classical violin. I can imagine that this is like earth-shattering, groundbreaking collaboration. This track to me feels like quintessential Eurovision, where it's intense, it's arresting, has the orchestral flair in the violin. Ultimately is not too risky, but catchy nonetheless.
I'm not surprised that they're a front runner either. You know, Finland, I think, represents the part of Eurovision where they say, oh, this is an apolitical event. But, you know, Finland is one of the newest members of NATO. They joined in 2023. Russia was kicked out of the Eurovision Song Contest for its invasion of Ukraine, which leads to the current boycott Israel had, as Israel is waging a war against Gaza, southern Lebanon, on all at the same time. Member nation, you know, a great contradiction to oust one state, sort of. So I think Finland represents a sort of...
This submission, Lickenheiten, is an interesting choice because they tend to keep their submissions silly. We heard Karya earlier with Cha Cha Cha. That was the 2023 entrant from Finland. After that, in 2024, we had No Rules from Windows 95 Man, which you'll remember as the denim song. No rules. It's how I live, how I find the wind beneath my wings. It's how I learn to fly. Last year, we had the track Ik Kome from Erica Vickman, where she climbs a giant phallic-looking microphone stand. So this kind of self-serious violin songwriter Imagine Dragons-y track is an interesting choice, and maybe they're trying to like legitimize themselves as an actual contender rather than like a joke.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to like afford the
violin. I was
just
going to say, it's like the violin takes this song to the next level, 100%. I without it, it would be a great song. With it, it is superb. Her tone is incredible. My God, she plays with such like power. Every note, it just like explodes off the instrument. This elevates this to another level.
Although, I believe, I don't know if the rules recently, Eurovision got rid of playing live instruments at the competition and that only voices would be heard. I'm very curious how this will be performed.
Yeah.
No,
no. Wait,
it's
how
all
recently?
Backing
that
tracks.
I remember the Ukrainian entry rocking that flute solo pretty hard, you know, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago.
Well, you'll be happy to know that the EBU has granted Linda Lampinius special permission to play the violin parts live.
Then, yeah, maybe you're right.
Quick backing track Eurovision history. Originally in Eurovision, you had to perform everything live. And then in the 70s, some instruments were kind of hard to replicate live. And so you could have them on stage and kind of air guitar them. For the next 20 years or so, there was a sort of hybrid model where some things would be mimed live, and then there would also be an orchestra to perform alongside with you. The orchestra was cut in the late 90s as a cost-saving measure, leaving only vocals performed on stage since then. It was also required for a while that your backing vocals would also have to be live, but once the pandemic happened, in order to limit the number of people on stage, basically Eurovision went to karaoke contest, if you will. Everything was backing tracks, one vocalist. If it was a group, multiple vocalists, obviously. But yeah, this is exciting. 2026, we're going to hear some live instruments again.
Wow. So anytime I saw an instrument, it was just like the equivalent of lip syncing?
Yeah, basically.
More or less. I'm sure, you know, maybe there's been exceptions here or there, but that is my understanding.
Yeah. Wow, fascinating.
So Liekenheiten has this technical violin prowess. I know we're not talking about the visuals, but Linda Lampinius is beautiful and gorgeous and looks like a goddess. And she's playing this violin while strutting down the catwalk. And it's a really arresting visual, and that's gotta count for something. She's an equal part next to Pete in this track. And I think that's really lovely as well. The violin and the vocals are designed to kind of be in conversation with one another, as if it's a duet, but the duet is with the violin.
Yeah.
The vocals are there. The composition is there. There's really that lasting impression of the track. You know, how does it make you feel when it's over? The way that the song ends is really interesting to me because it ends in this big climax that doesn't have a denouement. Like, it just stops.
Anti-drop.
Yeah, and the title of the song is Flamethrower, right? So it makes me think that the point is to, like, sound like Pete is getting lit on fire, like he's kind of burning Joan of Arc style.
Ooh.
And then the track just ends and it leaves the audience wanting more. You know, it's over. And I want more than these 3 minutes of Liekenheiten.
Nothing wrong with leaving someone wanting more. It means you might vote for them. Support for this show comes from Limpy. Limpy believes classrooms don't create artists, studio sessions do. It's a one-year program for songwriters, producers, and artists set in one of the most beautiful towns in Norway. I've been there, it's real, and when we left off, Limpy had invited me to come speak, and I'd said yes without quite knowing what I was about to walk into. What I walked into was a working studio complex. There were 20 odd studios fully kitted out with 70 students from all over the world rotating through these studios every single day. Upstairs is the main performance hall, and it's this beautiful, giant lofted ceiling, huge windows, gorgeous sound. That's where Limpy brings its mentors every week, Grammy winners, Billboard chart toppers, who give lectures on melody, top lining, collaboration, marketing yourself, the secrets of production, all these kinds of things. Then those mentors walk down to the studios and actually sit in on the sessions, giving concrete feedback on the songs that you're working on and how to improve them. After I gave my own workshop, I walked down to those studios myself just to hear what the students were making. And that's when it really clicked for me. Every door I passed by had a totally different sound. I heard songs from at least 30 different students that day, and every single one sounded professional, but not in this homogenous kind of way. One student's record was nothing like the next, and yet they were all collaborating and understanding each other's work. Most importantly, I felt like every one of them really knew exactly what they were writing and why. It's an experience that I wish I'd had. That's what 20 studios, 70 students, and a year of daily sessions produces. More on that in a bit. If you are interested, you can apply now at limpymusic.com. That's LIMPImusic.com. Applications close May 31st.
Okay, so we just listened to four frontrunners, and I can totally see why the odds makers have put these at the top of the running to win Eurovision Song Contest. But, you know, part of the joy of Eurovision, as you said, Rihanna, is also to celebrate the wild cards, the weirdos, the international freaks amongst us. What else should we be tuning into, even if it's not necessarily going to take the top crown?
This year, several countries come back to the competition after years away, one of which is the country of Bulgaria, who hasn't competed in the past 3 years. Their return is with the artist Dara and the track Bangaranga.
Oh, I love this track immediately. I haven't heard it yet, but this is it.
Yes.
It's not as good as Skrillex's Bangarang, but it's really close.
I was going to say, contrary to popular belief, this track is unrelated to Bangarang by Skrillex. Instead, Dara says, I'm the Bangaranga.
Which is...
What does that mean? Exactly. I have no idea what she's talking about.
Well, is it not Bulgarian?
I'm going to guess that this is just a nonsense word. It's a state of mind, guys. You either get it or you don't.
All right, let me hold on. Google Translate. Bangaranga detected as not the right language. Let's try that. Let's go Bulgarian to English.
The Bulgarian language does not have a word called bangaranga. I am not a linguist, feel pretty confident.
Absolutely not.
It translates as bangaranga.
Yeah, no. I don't know. If I have to explain to you guys, I'm not sure you're ever going to get it, honestly.
I hate that.
You just have to know it. Look deep into your soul and find your bangaranga.
Oh, I love some nonsense.
This is not my favorite song in the competition by any means. Again, Eurovision states that a song can't be over 3 minutes, but this song feels like it's a million years long. It's tough to get through. There's a cool tempo breakdown after the first chorus, but the song repeats the same thing over and over and over again.
It's because it's the bangaranga. I'm the bangaranga.
I'm the bangaranga.
I appreciate the Bulgarian reed instrument that we get in the breakdown. I appreciate that this is in a lineage of songs like Welcome to the Jungle, Welcome to the Machine, and then Welcome to the Bongaranga.
I can't do this one. This one's pulling teeth for me, I gotta say. The next track is a little bit better in my eyes. It's from another country returning to the competition after a 2-year absence, Romania. And the song Choke Me by Alexandra Capitanescu. This track I've described as if Lady Gaga was the singer in Evanescence.
Oh my God.
Okay, whoa. What?
Yeah, where do we start? The Lady Gaga imitation? The Mozart Queen of the Night aria interlude?
Was that Mozart? It reminded me of Nemo's The Code. From 2024,
exactly. That's
right?
What I was thinking of as well.
Very code-coded. Yeah, definitely.
The talk singing in the pre-chorus sounds so much like Lady Gaga. I love the rasp in her voice and this note that she hits as we move into the chorus where she's like, ah, like, it's so awesome. Obey me, you are, so obey me, are you not? Ah!
Oh my God, boy. This song is so extra.
I thought Eurovision was supposed to be a contest of peace. This is a very violent song.
First BDSM entry in the Eurovision catalog?
People don't really like it because of that reason. The general fan vibe that I've gathered is that people think this is too explicit for the live broadcast. I can kind of see where they're coming from.
Yeah, family-friendly event. I kind of feel like if Choke Me came out in America, I'm instantaneously like, no, Lady Gaga sound alike. But that it's coming from Eurovision, I'm a little bit more intrigued.
Well, on that point, I do think this song is very American, and I think that's why it's not connecting with the Eurovision audience. This has like nu metal, butt rocky elements that don't play well to a European audience, you know? And I think that's the song's downfall, even though I'm like, this is pretty epic.
Yeah, I mean, as someone who loves butt rock and Lady Gaga and has just come back from a European vacation, I feel have not done a good job of being an ambassador to our culture. How are there not more votes for this track?
Exactly. Maybe if I was watching this year, I could vote for this one, but I won't be, so.
All right. What else is the wild card?
Last but not least, we have another sleeper hit. That's Moldova's Satoshi and the aptly titled Viva Moldova. I love this song. It's like a multicultural jock jam. It's exactly what you would expect it to be.
What?
Yeah. Wow.
All right. What is this song about?
Well, it's about Moldova.
I heard him say Moldova is on duty at one point.
Yeah, I mean, it's in several different languages, including Spanish and Italian. He's saying, long live Moldova. Greetings to everyone. Moldova is on duty. Goodbye, crazy life. Hello, Moldova. Like, that's what he's saying. It's very, very simple, but fun. Ode to Moldova. We need more of those.
Wow.
They do say, goodbye, Europe. See you later.
Uh-oh.
Moldova is coming.
Whoa. Interesting.
Yeah.
See, this is the part where it's like, it's really unfortunate that this event cannot consistently reinforce its rules and avoid the really negative political repercussions that it's found itself in, because there's so many participants who have something to say, who are trying to make their claim in culture, especially from small member nations that don't otherwise get to be heard. And I think Moldova's just doing an amazing job of saying, come on to Moldova. Like, I want to go now.
It's like a tourism ad.
It's a great
one. They're not going to win. They know they're not going to win. So instead, they're just being like, this is all that Moldova has to offer. Isn't it awesome? Say goodbye to Europe and hello, Moldova. I love that.
I mean, I'm looking up tickets on Kayak right now. What's the capital of Moldova?
The capital city of Moldova is...
Chisinau.
Not something I can pronounce.
Are there direct flights from LA to Chisinau?
We got to figure it out, Nate. I'll board a plane right now. This song is doing it for me.
What a journey you've taken us on, Rihanna. And I appreciate, you know, for those who aren't going to be watching, getting to get a sense of the important things, you've given it to us.
Hearing all these entries, knowing where the bookmakers stand, I feel like I have a pretty good sense of what the vibe is in Europe right now musically, where a lot of these different countries are in terms of promoting their sounds. I mean, Moldova is just kind of putting themselves right out there. Other countries are doing the same. I am noticing a trend this year where the songs are less risky than we're used to from Eurovision. I wonder if the general politically charged tenor of the competition and the swirling politics of Eurovision and the EBU at the moment are making it so that contestants are playing it safe and not pushing the boundaries. I wonder if there's a correlation there, because largely the crop of contestants this year are kind of lackluster in my eyes.
Certainly, we didn't listen to every entry, but yeah, I would say I didn't hear anything like some of the entries in past years that really just made my jaw drop, made me kind of blown away in this way that only Eurovision can provide. So we'll see if the contest is able to sort of regain that mantle in the future.
Maybe an alternative path from watching this year could be just going and watching the Will Ferrell film Eurovision, which is a great comedic mockery celebration of what Eurovision wants to be.
You bring that up every year, Charlie.
Yeah,
well,
I was just going to say, Charlie loves that movie.
I love that movie. And
it's great. He represents
Iceland, right? Which is not participating this year. So let's all go support Iceland.
Oh, my God. I mean, you can't even. Rachel McAdams sings in Icelandic at the end of that movie. I mean, I was bawling.
She's got range.
It's got everything. It's got laughs. It's got tears. Check this out, y'all. Eurovision is a musical competition.
Mm.
Speaking of competitions.
Mm.
Nice transition.
Thank you. I appreciate it, guys. We launch our annual bingo game at the beginning of the year, and we've been getting some chatter from listeners that there might be some squares to check off. We're kind of reaching the half point of 2026. So, Charlie, can you pull up our bingo card and we can go through and see if there are any new entries to check off?
Bingo.switchedonpop.com. Yes. Number one, Big Beat Revival. Don't think has happened. Number two, Guitar Solo's return, I think highly dependent upon another prediction, which we're going to get to shortly. I don't think it's happened yet. Three, Animated Avatars Rise Again.
Not yet.
We're waiting for K-pop Demon Hunters 2. Four, Madison Beer Breakout. Has it happened, Rihanna?
Oh, that was really off.
No, not happening.
A year of
beer. Sorry, everybody.
It's not to be.
Five, Old Time Religion Worship song hits the top 40. I'm not sure if we've crossed that one yet. I don't think so. Six, Timbaland Style Production hits the top 10.
Can we count Stateside by Pink Panthers?
Let's listen for a second. Will you pull it up?
Yeah. Specifically, it's the remix of Stateside with Zara Larsson. I'm freezing outside.
I feel my skin tight. My coat is empty. Yeah. I look up at you.
I think so. I think that's an easy
check. I mean, which Justin Timberlake song is that?
Something off of Future Sex.
Get Your Sexy
now.
On. Go sure. ahead. Sexy Back.
It's Sexy Back. I'm freezing outside. I feel my skin tight. My coat is inside. I look up at you. Sexy Back is the reference. Okay.
Yeah.
So we've crossed off Timbaland Style Production, number six. That's going on. If it's on your bingo card, you might be getting close to bingo a little bit, a little closer. Seven, Certified Human Label, Rise of AI, going to create the need to be able to say who is human and who is not. Rihanna, Spotify did just announce that they will be giving a special label to verified accounts so that they can try to label what is and is not human. Now, I think that's happening at just one DSP. It's not across the entire music ecosystem. I think it counts. I think your prediction has come true.
I think it counts as well. Amazing. So maybe I was so far off with Madison Beer, but it's circled around.
And oh, you've got
other
ones
that I said are right, which is great.
All right, number 8, Drake Goes Country. It's going to happen. Not happened yet.
Iceman's coming out soon.
Oh, okay.
There's still time.
Number 9, Bruno Mars makes a return with Ska. We were way off. didn't happen. 10, Gen Alpha Takeover. Have we had an artist born 2010 to 2024 who's reached the top 40?
I don't think so yet. Still could happen.
11, Brass Goes Big. Heavy brass song reaches the top 20. I don't think like main instrument brass. No. Number 12, The Death of Auto-Tune. Any major like hit with completely raw, unprocessed vocals, tuning issues in the top 10? I haven't heard it yet.
Not exactly.
Number 13, Narrative Over Form. A structurally unconventional narrative song reaches the top 40. I think we could argue that our last episode, Olivia Rodrigo's Drop Dead, killing off the second verse. We didn't mention in that episode how she never repeats the hook the same way twice.
Right.
I think that might do it.
Well, we've got an email from a listener, Michael Murphy,
yeah,
who claims that he's checked off every square but 3.
What?
He's going to say that Ray is an example of a new narrative form.
Interesting.
Like the end credit track Fan, for instance. That's not a Hot 100 hat.
Yeah. I mean, so, she only had Where's My Husband, and I don't think that qualifies as a very sort of soul traditional song.
Let's keep going.
Okay, number 14, Piano Ballad Charts in the top 10.
Okay, Michael says Sienna Spyro, Die on This Hill.
Yeah, but it's not in the top 10.
It was top 40, maybe.
It reached number 19. It peaked at 19 on the Hot 100. Was our rules top 10?
To top 10.
Wow, we're really being sticklers here. Sorry, Michael.
15, Instrumental Hit, lands on the Hot 100.
I don't think we've heard that, no.
Not yet.
We need Skrillex back.
Yeah.
16, Horrifying Music emerges, some kind of new horrifying rap genre that Nate pontificated about. I don't think we've seen it yet.
No, not yet.
17, Album Sequel hits number 1. Not yet. Number 18, Spanish Language number 1.
Ooh.
Did we get that after the Super Bowl? I believe after the Super Bowl halftime show, Bad Bunny hit number 1 on the Hot 100 with DTMF off of Debitida Mas Fotos. So I think
that
that's
is
an
correct.
Easy check off. That's what I was banking on. So I'm happy it came through.
Well done. All right. Number 19, cover song Comeback. We haven't heard it yet. Number 20, my favorite prediction I made, a Nepo Baby parent duet. We haven't seen it. Come on, J.J. Abrams on the new Gracie Abrams album. He is a synth head. He loves synthesizers. I want to see that happen. Okay, number 21, a major Jamaican star in the top 20. Not yet. All right, 22, Rihanna. I believe this is on you. Rock revival, a guitar-driven band breaks the top 20. Now, I don't think we should have said guitar-driven band.
Yeah.
I think this is what we're about to see. As of this taping, Charlie XCX just announced a rock song coming out tomorrow, and we're all waiting on Beyonce. Where's Renaissance Act 3, the rock version? This is going to happen this year. There's just no doubt.
Yeah, I think I'm pulling for the residual effects of the Charlie XCX / rumored Beyonce rock moment to usher in a bunch of guitar songs by bands into the Billboard Hot 100. Time will tell. Maybe we could revisit that one in the back half of the year, see if it's come true.
Okay, great. Number 23, Jam Band's Breakthrough. A Jam Band album reaches the top 20. Don't think so.
No.
Number 24, this is one of my favorites, Rebecca Black Assance. Rebecca Black surpasses her previous peak of number 58 with Friday. She is DJing, getting her name out there, but I don't think we have the song yet. Might happen.
Not yet.
Finally, number 25, the Rebel Alliance, a major political anthem, breaks into the top 20. We heard Bruce Springsteen give us The Streets of Minneapolis. That song didn't have the legs that I think we might have hoped to capture that moment. So I don't believe we have crossed the threshold there, but we have checked off a few. It's very possible that someone could have bingo out there. If you do, let us know. If you don't, you can get your bingo card. We'll drop it in our show notes.
The year is young.
Yeah, it's still possible.
We'll have to review all of Michael wrote us a long email with a lot of different boxes that he's checked off. So we'll have to review those a little more in a more granular way and get back. But I suspect we are still waiting for the true B-I-N-G-O.
We're only in Q2.
Yeah.
There's 2.5 other Qs to get through.
Here's my Q. Who's going to read the credits?
Switched on Pop is produced by Rhiannon Cruz, edited by Lissa Soap, engineered by Brandon McFarlane, illustrations by Iris Gottlieb, video by Nick Rips. Our music is by Zach Tenario and Jossie Adams of Archiris. We're a member of the Vox Media Podcast Network, production of Vulture, which is part of New York Magazine. You can subscribe at nymag.com/pod.
Find us anywhere you get your podcasts. We are Switched on Pop on every platform. Subscribe to our newsletter on Substack. And what else? We got merch on the website. Check it out, switchedonpop.com. What else, guys?
We'll be back with a special episode this Friday.
I'm chatting with Rostam about his spectacular album, American Stories. It is definitely worth a listen. I'll see you on Friday.
Until then, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Support for the show comes from Limpy, the Lillehammer Institute of Music Production and Industries. Limpy believes classrooms don't create artists, studio sessions do. It's a one-year program for songwriters, producers, and artists built by actual hit songwriters. Here's why I keep talking about it. I've made nearly 500 episodes of Switched on Pop, and I'll tell you the truth, at the very beginning, I didn't entirely know what I was doing. I got good by doing a lot of it, studying and observing the greats, but most importantly, collaborating with Nate and other journalists, writers, musicians, and learning from all of them. And I deeply believe that songwriting is the same. You get great at writing songs by writing a lot of them alongside people who are also writing them, with mentors who've already done it and surrounded by other songwriters, producers, and artists. There's no shortcut. You just gotta write a lot of songs. That's exactly what I saw at Limpy. Students leaving with over 100 songs in their back pocket and an international network already built out. And that international piece, I think, really matters. You know, as an American, you can spend your whole career inside your own scene, but pop is global, and the people writing the next decade of hits are in Seoul, Stockholm, Lagos, and in Lillehammer. Limpy puts you in rooms with 70 of them for a year in one of the most beautiful towns on earth, where there's nothing to distract you. All you gotta do is work on your craft. You can ask anyone in my life. I've spent the last 6 months bragging about getting to go to Norway and thinking about the next time that I'll get to go back. If you're a songwriter, a producer, an artist who'd rather be making music than sitting in a lecture hall, you should go check it out. Because as Limpy says, classrooms don't create artists, studio sessions do. Apply now at limpymusic.com. That's limpimusic.com. Applications close May 31st.